They rode out through the barrack gates and down the main street of Nairobi. Although it was early morning, the wide, unsurfaced road was crowded and bustling, like that of a gold rush boomtown. Sir Charles, the governor of the colony, encouraged settlers to come out from the old country by offering land grants of thousands of acres at a nominal fee, and they flocked in. The road was almost blocked by their wagons, which were piled high with their scanty possessions and forlorn families as they journeyed on to take up their parcels of land in the wilderness. Hindu, Goanese, and Jewish traders and storekeepers followed them. Their mud-brick shops lined the sides of the road, hand-printed boards on the fronts offering everything, from champagne and dynamite to picks, shovels, and shotgun cartridges. Penrod and Leon picked their way through the ox wagons and mule teams until Penrod reined in before the Norfolk Hotel to greet a small man in a solar topi who was perched like an elf in the back of a buggy drawn by a pair of Birchall zebra. "Good morning, my lord," Penrod saluted him. The little man adjusted his steel-rimmed spectacles on the end of his nose. "Ah, Colonel, good to see you. Where are you headed?" "We're riding out to visit Percy Phillips." "Dear old Percy," he nodded. "Great friend of mine. I hunted with him the first year I came out from home. We spent 6 months together trekking up as far as the Northern Frontier District and on into the Sudan. He guided me to two enormous elephant. Lovely man. Taught me everything I know about hunting big game. Which is a very great deal. Your feats with that .577 rifle of yours are almost as legendary as his." "Kind of you to say so, even though I detect a touch of hyperbole in that compliment." He turned his bright, inquisitive eyes on Leon. "And who is this young fellow?" "May I present my nephew, Lieutenant Leon Courtney? Leon, this is Lord Delamere." "I am honoured to make your acquaintance, my lord." "I know who you are." His lordship's eyes twinkled with amusement. Apparently he did not pretend the same high moral ethics as the rest of the local society. Leon guessed that his next remark would be some reference to Verity O'Hearn. So he added hastily, "I am much taken with your carriage horses, my lord." "Caught and trained them with my own fair hands," Delamere gave him a last piercing glance. Then he turned away. "Can understand why young Verity was so taken with him," he thought, "and why all the old hens in the coop were cackling with jealous outrage. That young blade is the answer to a maiden's prayer." He touched the brim of his helmet with his buggy whip. "I wish you a very good day, Colonel. Give my compliments to Percy." He whipped up the zebra and drove on. Lord Delamere was once a great shikari, but now he's become an ardent conservator of wild game, Penrod said. He has an estate of more than 100,000 acres at Soysambu, on the west side of the Rift Valley, which he's turning into a game sanctuary, mortgaging his family estates in England to the very hilt to do so. The finest hunters are all like that. When they tire of killing, they become the most devoted protectors of their former quarry. They left the town and rode out along the Ngong Hills until they looked down on a sprawling encampment in the forest. Tents, grass huts, and rondavels were spread out under the trees in no particular order. "This is Percy's base, Tandala Camp." Tandala was the Swahili name for the Greater Kudu. "He brings his clients up from the coast by railway, and from here he can strike out into the blue on foot, on horseback or by ox wagon." They rode on down the hill, but before they reached the main camp, they came to the skinning sheds, where the hunting trophies were prepared and preserved. There the upper branches of the trees were filled with roosting vultures and the carnivorous marabou storks. The stench of drying skins and heads was rank and powerful. They reined in the horses to watch two ancient Indorobo working on the fresh skull of a bull elephant with their hand axes, chipping away the bone to expose the roots of the tusks. As they watched, one man drew a tusk free of its bony canal. The pair staggered away with it, their skinny legs buckling under the weight. They struggled unsuccessfully to lift the immense ivory shaft into a canvas sling suspended from the hook of a beam scale. Leon slipped out of the saddle and took their burden from them. Effortlessly, he reached up and placed it in the sling. Under the weight of the tusk, the needle revolved halfway around the scale's dial. "Thanks for your help, young fellow." Leon turned. A tall man was standing behind his shoulder. He had the features of a Roman patrician. His short, neat beard was silver-grey, and his bright blue eyes were steady. There could be no question as to who this was. Leon knew that Percy Phillips's Swahili name was Bwana Samawati, the man with eyes the colour of sky. "Hello, Percy," Penrod confirmed his identity as he rode up and dismounted. "Penrod, you look fit." They shook hands. "So do you, Percy. Hardly a day older than when we last met. You must be wanting a favour. Is this your nephew?" Percy did not wait for the reply. "What do you think of that tusk, young man?"
"Magnificent, sir. I've never seen anything like it."
£122. Percy Phillips read the weight from the scale and smiled. "The best piece of ivory I've taken in the last many months. Not too many of those around any more." He nodded with satisfaction. "Much too good for the miserable Dago who shot it. Cheek of the man. He complained he'd been given short measure for his miserly £500. Didn't want to pay up at the end of the safari. I had to talk to him very sternly indeed." He blew softly on the scarred knuckles of his right fist, then turned back to Penrod. "I had my cook bake a batch of ginger snaps for you. I remember your penchant for them." He took Penrod's arm, and limping slightly, led him towards the large mess tent in the centre of the encampment. "How did you hurt your leg, sir?" Leon asked, as he fell in with them. Percy laughed. "Big old bull buffalo jumped on it. But that was 30 years ago, when I was still a greenhorn. Taught me a lesson I've never forgotten." Percy and Penrod settled in the folding chairs under the flap of the mess tent to exchange news of mutual acquaintances and bring each other up to date with goings-on in the colony. Meanwhile, Leon looked around the camp with interest. Despite its apparently haphazard layout, it was obviously convenient and comfortable. The ground was swept clean, the huts were all in good repair. On the periphery of the main camp, on the slope of the hill above it, a small whitewashed and thatched bungalow was obviously Percy's home. There was only one exception to the camp's order, which caught Leon's attention. A Vauxhall truck, of the same vintage as the vehicle he and Bobby owned, was parked behind a hut. It was in a terrible condition. One of the front wheels was missing. The windscreen was cracked and opaque with filth, the bonnet was propped open with a log, and the engine had been removed to a crude workbench in the shade of a nearby tree. Somebody had started to strip it down, but seemed to have lost interest and abandoned it. Engine parts were scattered around or piled on the driver's seat. A flock of chickens had taken over the chassis as their roost, and splashes of their white droppings almost obscured the original paintwork. "Your uncle tells me you want to be a hunter. Is that right?" Leon turned back to Percy Phillips when he realised he'd been addressed. "Yes, sir." Percy stroked his silver beard and studied him thoughtfully. Leon did not look away, which Percy liked. Polite and respectful, but sure of himself, he thought. "Have you ever shot an elephant?"
"No, sir."
"Lion?"
"No, sir."
"Rhino, buffalo, leopard?" "Fraid not, sir." "What have you taken, then?" "Just a few Tommies and Grants for the pot, sir. But I can learn. That's why I've come to you." "At least you're honest. If you've never taken dangerous game, what can you do? Give me a good reason why I should offer you a job."
"Well, sir, I can ride."
"Are you talking about horses or human females?" Leon flushed vividly. He opened his mouth to reply, but closed it again. "Yes, young man, word gets around. Now listen to me. Many of my clients bring their families with them on safari, wives and daughters. How do I know you won't try to rabbit them at the first opportunity?"
"Whatever you heard is not true, sir," Leon protested. "I'm not like that at all."
"You'll keep your fly buttoned around here," Percy grunted. "Other than ride, what else can you do?"
"I could mend that," Leon pointed to the wreckage. Percy showed immediate interest.
"I have one of the same make and model," Leon went on. "It was in similar condition to yours when I got it. I put it back together, and now it runs like a Swiss watch."
Does it, by God? Damn motors are a complete mystery to me. All right, so you can ride and repair trucks. That's a start. What else? Can you shoot?
Yes, sir.
Leon won the Governor's Cup at the regimental rifle competition at the beginning of the year, Penrod confirmed. He can shoot. I'll vouch for that.
Paper targets are not live animals. They don't bite you or jump on you if you miss, Percy pointed out. If you want to be a hunter, you'll need a rifle.
I'm not talking about a little service Enfield. A pea shooter isn't much use in an argument with an angry buffalo. Have you got a real rifle?
Yes, sir.
What is it?
A Holland & Holland Royal .470 Nitro Express.
Percy's blue eyes widened.
Very well, he conceded.
That is a real rifle. They don't come much better than that. But you'll also need a tracker. Can you find a good one?
Yes, sir.
He was thinking of Manioro, but then he remembered Loycott. Actually, I have two. Percy gazed at a brilliant golden-green sunbird flitting about in the branches above the tent. Then he seemed to make up his mind.
You're lucky. Just so happens that I'm going to need help. I'm to lead a big safari early next year. The client is an extremely important person.
This client of yours, I wonder, could he be Theodore Roosevelt, the President of the United States of America? Penrod asked innocently.
Percy was startled. In the name of all that's holy, Penrod, how on earth did you discover that? He demanded. Nobody's supposed to know.
The U.S. State Department sent a cable to the Commander-in-Chief of the British Army, Lord Kitchener, in London. They wanted to know more about you before the President hired you.
I was on Kitchener's staff in South Africa during the war, so he telegraphed me, Penrod admitted.
Percy burst out laughing.
Oh, you're a sly creature, Ballantyne. Here I was, believing that Teddy Roosevelt's visit was a state secret. So you put in a good word for me. Seems I'm even deeper in your debt.
He turned back to Leon.
Here's what I'll do with you. I'm going to make you prove yourself. First, I want you to put that heap of rubbish together and get it running.
He nodded at the dismembered truck.
I want you to make good your boast. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
When you've done that, you'll take your famous .470 and your two even more famous trackers, go out there into the blue and bag an elephant. I could never employ a hunter who's never hunted. When you've done that, I want you to bring back the tusks to prove it.
Yes, sir, Leon grinned.
Have you enough money to buy a game license? It'll cost you £10.
No, sir.
I'll lend it to you, Percy offered, but the ivory will be mine.
Sir, lend me the money, and you can have the pick of one tusk. I'll keep the other.
Percy chuckled. The lad could fight his own corner. He was no pushover. He was beginning to enjoy him.
Fair enough, boy.
If you take me on, what would you pay me, sir?
Pay you?
I'm doing your uncle a favour. You should pay me.
How about 5 shillings a day? Leon suggested.
How about 1 shilling? Percy countered.
2?
You drive a hard bargain. Percy shook his head sadly, but stuck out his hand.
Leon shook it vigorously.
You won't regret it, sir. I promise you.